Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Voice of the San Francisco Giants and a broadcaster from ESPN. I'm sure college football is pulling him to an interesting location this week. Dave Fleming joining us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Dave appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Dave, always a pleasure, pal. How you doing?
Nice to talk to you guys. I'm doing great. Thank you.
So Yaz, the headliner in Boston, and man, he really fit the bill. Quite a little Disney script last night, albeit a very long screenplay, but homering in a Giants win, not too shabby.
Yeah, we could have used an editor. It was a pretty remarkable night in that perspective, and probably from a couple other perspectives, too. There was a lot of pressure on that kid. I mean, it's easy to say, hey, that name means something around Boston, means a lot, whatever. But to see the reaction of people before the game and how he was just swarmed every move. I mean, I was standing on the field during batting practice, and he came over to give somebody a hug who was standing, you know, behind the ropes, sort of the gallery section of batting practice. You would have thought like a movie star had walked over there. The cameras are flashing and he's just giving the person a hug. Jeez. So he dealt with it beautifully and played a really good game. And Joe Castiglione, who's the voice of the Red Sox for the last 30 years, said that he thought it was the most remarkable moment for a visiting player that he had ever seen at Fenway Park, which I thought was saying something. So anyway, good for him. And just the mere fact that he did it, hit the home run, you know, I bet he can enjoy these next 2 days even more, because it's almost like the pressure is off for a guy who is the center of attention in this town.
You know, I've heard mixed reports that Yastrzemski doesn't see the relationship as romantically as the diehard baseball fans would like him to see it. What do you think about that?
Well, which you're talking about, Granddad or Mike?
Yeah, I guess that door swings both ways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Carl, it's funny because Carl is a really good person. The Red Sox love him, but he does not want to be around. He does not want to be in the spotlight. He doesn't even go to Hall of Fame weekend in Cooperstown. I mean, if you're going to do one thing on the calendar each year as a Hall of Famer, you would think it would be that, where, you know, it's the ultimate setup for you to just see some old pals and buddies and bask in the glory of your career. And Carl doesn't even want to go to Cooperstown. You know, recluse is probably too strong, but he does not want to do any of that stuff. And, you know, tonight will be the first game that he has seen his grandson play in person. And so it is a strange thing. I mean, he was there yesterday and didn't even stay for the game. And so I think it's a complicated relationship in that Mike's granddad is just, you know, whatever word you want to use, cranky. You would have thought by now granddad would come see the kid play a big league game in person just to be there and be supportive. That's just not the way it works. And so, you know, I think maybe it is true that it's not as, you know, romantic of a story as maybe we all want to paint it out to be. But make no mistake, the granddad loves his grandkid and vice versa, and the Red Sox still love Carl, even though he has an unusual way of carrying himself for a guy who is so beloved.
Interesting relationship, and now with Moron Cranky, here's Ray Ratto.
I'm in favor of Cranky, first of all.
Well, me too.
And I think that Carl Yastrzemski is a little too effusive.
He's too what?
Effusive. You went to Stanford. You can do this.
Oh, yeah. I've noticed that, too. He's got way too many nice things to say about people.
Yeah, he's just naturally bubbly. We're now down to the last week and a half of baseball, have you noticed that the atmosphere around the club is now sort of more nostalgic toward the manager, knowing that he's probably never going to manage again, and he's certainly not managing here anymore? Have you noticed that the atmosphere around him and about him has changed?
Yeah, from the players' perspective, I don't think so. I don't. I think the players have spent all year with that in the back of their minds, celebrating their manager, but also just kind of doing their jobs. It's undeniable that the Giants front office has ramped up the nostalgia, and front office, I mean, you know, marketing team and whatnot. And that's to be expected. This guy is a gigantic figure in Giants history, and it's very proper for all of us to say goodbye. We are going to exhaust all the ways we can say goodbye to this guy. That's just the reality of it. But from a player's perspective, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, and part of that also is September. You know, the main thing that I notice these days around the Giants the last couple weeks is there's 38 players. I mean, I'm embarrassed. I walk in the clubhouse and I think to myself, which one is that? Who's? I should know everybody by sight. And yet I'm a little uncertain around a couple of these guys just because there's so many new faces. And that's okay. That's not a criticism. But I actually think that the theme of September right now is, oh, my God, do I know everybody's name? And that takes a little bit of the edge off the other stuff.
Well, how much of that is a result of you spending way too much time with the UNLV depth chart?
Well, I could also be, and I do feel guilty this time of year. I mean, I end up going up to some of these rookies and be like, man, I probably should have said hi to you 2 weeks ago, but I was in Boise, Idaho, or wherever I was. But I apologize. It is a strange part of this time of year for me too. But no year has ever been quite like this, and last night was sort of the epitome of that. And you know what? For people who want to be cynical and criticize the Giants for cycling through so many players or whatever, where would this season be without Yastrzemski and Dickerson and Solano and all of the other players that the Giants, I mean, it's a long list of players that the Giants have given chances to, who have come through and had really nice, productive years. This season would not be ending the way that it is without those guys.
I'm glad you finished there, Dave, because that's really my thing with Yastrzemski is, look, this is the goal. When you're not great, you have the opportunity to cycle through players, and I think they found a long-term outfielder for the squad. Would you agree?
Well, I do, too. I mean, the age is always a complicating factor because, you know, baseball has skewed so young, and players are aging so much differently these days, or the game has skewed so young, and skill sets are demanding a, you know, there's a different skill set that is in demand. So all of that is hard for me from my chair to evaluate. Mike's 29 years old. You know, does that mean in 2 years the skills are going to be way different and he's not going to be as effective? The window might be a lot shorter for Mike than for somebody else. But this guy is legit. I mean, this is not a fluke what he's doing. He has bat-to-ball skills. He's got power. He's got speed. I think he can play center field if the Giants really needed him to. You know, I don't know what the plans are for Kevin Pillar. I assume he's going to be back, but that's not 100% certainty. He could handle center field. Mike could. So, yeah, I mean, in general, I think they have found somebody who can help them, not just now. It's not a fluke. And he's probably not the only one on this team. I think the Giants have found some pieces for next year and the future. And that's a huge part of a year like this. If you're not going to win a championship, let's make some progress on some other fronts. The Giants have done that.
Voice of the Giants, Dave Fleming here on 95.7 The Game. So is Madison Bumgarner next year's opening day starter?
That is a great question. I do not know. I mean, I've probably gone back and forth this year in my own head of yes, no, no chance, slam dunk. I don't know. My feeling is probably that the Giants are going to give him an offer that is very comparable to the best offer that he gets from somewhere else. But he is determined to see what those other offers are. I mean, this is a guy who is loyal to the Giants, has been the ultimate sort of on-field warrior for the Giants over all these years. But that does not mean he's given some sort of discount, or you know, he wants to see what's out there. And I don't blame him for that. And the Giants are not in a position necessarily where, you know, he's the last piece of the puzzle, or they have to, you know, there is definitely an offer out there that could trump whatever the Giants feel comfortable in doing. But I don't know if that'll come. So I really don't know how to answer that question. If you force me, I mean, I think the odds would just tell you that the answer is more likely no than yes, because there are 29 other teams. And, you know, the Giants, I don't believe, are getting, like, some gigantic home advantage or discount. But I still think there's a pretty decent chance he is the opening day starter next year.
If he does decide to leave, is it going to be because somebody overwhelmed him with an offer, or because the Giants are going to make that next great leap in their change, and Bumgarner has always been a little leery of change?
He has, that's true, and with no Bochy and with lots of new faces, I think Bumgarner is the kind of guy who is a little uneasy about all that stuff. But ultimately, I do believe he knows he has a comfortable home here, even with a new manager. I do think that there is a... I don't think that just because Bochy is leaving and maybe some other players are leaving, I don't think that really impacts Bumgarner as much as maybe it would on the surface. That's a really good question, though, and I don't know the answer to that. But I don't... My guess is that he would still feel good about this organization and knowing that, hey, they understand me. He is different. Bumgarner's different. I mean, I love the guy. But there, you know, there's a chance that another team could react a little differently to having him around. He knows how the Giants react very positively to having him around.
Dave, always a pleasure to talk to you. Are there any direct flights from Logan to Boise, Idaho for the game you're doing tomorrow night?
I haven't found one. I'm going to take a flight that stops somewhere, hopefully for not very long, and then I'll be back, you know, because why wouldn't I go to Boise and then go back to Atlanta on Saturday? So I'll be crisscrossing the country a couple times in the next couple days.
Hopefully you get miles on that.
Yeah, invoke the Herb Street rule.
I need the wheels up deal. Where is that deal for me?
Amen. Dave, thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
See you guys.
Get that man a private aircraft. My goodness. Trying to fly commercial to Boise. It sounds like hell.
Dave's better than commercial.
That's what chased Trent Dilfer out of ESPN, because he wanted the private jet. And the only guy who's got a private jet deal is Herb Street. And the only reason he's got one is because they have him going from game day in Wyoming to
cross country
at Clemson that night.
Right.
Who in broadcasting most deserves the private jet deal? Who least deserves it? 888-957-9570. We're doing that next. We got a What If Wednesday, a name game in about an hour from now, here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
All right, so where were we? Private planes. It really is the new red rope of life. It's the club that you wish you were in, secretly covet to be in, but then shame when you're not in it. Who would ever fly commercial if you had the chance to fly privately? I say this readily, admitting I've never even been offered a chance to fly in a private
plane. I was going to say, have you ever flown private?
Never.
Yeah, me neither. My parents have.
Never. My parents have too.
They have some very, very well off friends who have invited them on a private jet before. Yeah. Sounds nice.
Ray, private plane guy?
No. I mean,
besides coming into work every day?
Please, I barely fit my bloated car into the garage.
He takes the Kobe helicopter and just lands on the roof of the building every day.
No, so I've never come within 1,000 feet of one.
Real quick, we're going to get back to the Niners. We're going to get back to baseball. We're going to get back to a little What If Wednesday for you coming up in about a half an hour. But you said that Dilfer was out at ESPN because he asked for the private jet treatment?
It was part of the negotiation, and he wanted it, and they said no. And at that point, they realized this guy's going to ask for way more than we think he's worth. But he put that on the table.
But why did Trent need a private plane? He's going to cover Monday night football games.
Because Herb Street had one.
Right, but Herb Street has to fly to, like, Corvallis sometimes. Like, Herb Street has to go to the places that big airports and major carriers don't necessarily get to.
That's the logic.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what Dilfer said. Herb Street gets one, I should get one.
No.
And Herb Street is higher on the ESPN pecking order than Dilfer is by any stretch.
Oh, yeah. Herb Street is up there in the rarefied air of ESPN talent, where he gets the whatever you want treatment.
I would say that of their analysts, he is regarded as the most important in any sport.
I don't think it's close. Who else would you even put on that list?
Doris Burke?
No, because she's not really she's not a full-time analyst.
That's
yet.
The problem. She
I mean, I
be
regard
that good.
Her as the best thing they have by far. But
yeah, I tend to agree.
The only person who might ask for it and get it would be Mark Jackson. He's on their number one basketball broadcast,
right?
And ESPN has thrown in with basketball. That's how that works. It's not about talent.
Breen started throwing his weight around, they would capitulate to Mike Breen.
Oof.
Probably not.
I got to tell you, I don't think they'd capitulate to any of those dudes, Jackson and Van Gundy included. I think that it would quickly become a two-man broadcast if one of those guys asked for a plane. I really think Herb Street stands alone in this.
I want to stand corrected. I think Breen, because he also does the Knicks games, if he got into a jam where he had to do a Knicks game and then be somewhere else the next day, they might spring for him, but it would have to be an extraordinary situation.
And it would be a one-time, we'll take care of you here, not a you can have this private plane for your activities.
And see, even then, if he's in New York, he can catch a red eye. Yeah.
So I heard that Dan Patrick was the first guy to have first-class status written into his contract at ESPN. He was the first guy who says, you want to fly me anywhere, it's a first-class ticket. And I'm sure there are other hosts at ESPN who have reached that status. Dilfer should have tried to play that fly me first class card, but the right answer for him would have been, look, we're never going to private plane you because any city you're flying to is for an NFL game, and all NFL games are somewhat close to a major airport. So first class maybe, private, no. That was a funny hill to die on, if indeed that's where Trent died.
Well, he might have died anyway, but he threw that on there, and I think they all of a sudden said, boy, it's easy. It's kind of easy to get rid of him.
This
now.
Is an easy right. No.
By the way, Mike McGlinchey has officially been confirmed for 5 o'clock from the all San right. Francisco 49ers. Looking forward to that. Of the guys doing games right now who would be in the private playing club, I would go Nance and Romo. That's it. Like, they
do
really
you have
are
to
the
take
price of admission.
A team?
What do you mean?
Like, you have to take Nance and Romo? Because I wrote down two names.
No, you don't have to take it. There are no rules to this.
I made a new broadcast team for this.
Ooh.
The team I'm giving the jet to is Michaels and Romo. Because I love Jim Nance, but I think Michaels and Romo is a better broadcast.
But again, we're now cross-pollinating streams, networks.
I'm fantasy.
Yeah, you're a total fantasy broadcast.
Fantasy broadcast team. But Romo's the guy.
I hate to say this, but I would make the new Monday Night Football crew take the bus to their next game. Like, and not in a romantic John
like
Madden
part of a,
kind
part of
way.
A Greyhound.
Yeah, like you get to sit next to the bathroom. Yeah. Screw you. You get the bus, Tessitore. Yeah.
That's mean. Joe Tessitore tries his hardest.
You can hear him trying his hardest too.
Unfortunately, he's not given a lot of help right now either.
He's not.
I like Booger as a personality. I'm not sure he was ready to be the analyst.
The one guy that I would fly in because he officially adds something to the proceedings, I think Michael Buffer should be flown in to do the introductions of any significant boxing anything. Bring in Michael Buffer, fly him in, and I guarantee you that he is the private plane club, Michael Buffer.
Yeah, but he's also so expensive to have at all.
Skip Bruce.
That it's just not.
Michael Buffer is so expensive, and he is so litigious when people quote his famous saying,
which we're not going to say.
We will not even say it. We will not even say it because he might send us a bill.
No. He would.
He would send us a bill. He would.
He finds out.
If you're talking about fantasy crews, I would like to just be possible to whoever is doing the game. If we have a tie game in a college basketball game with 3 minutes to play,
we know
Gus Johnson gets to tap you on the shoulder and finish that game. Bring in Gus Johnson for any tie basketball game under 3 minutes in the NCAA tournament.
That's what he should do. That should literally be his job. Because after we fell in love with Gus Johnson in those NCAA games...
He left CBS.
Yes, and everyone started trying to put him in all these other roles and capture that enthusiasm, but it's just not the same. He should just be at the tournament, flown in to the most competitive game of the day. That's who really needs a private plane.
Nah, he did this to himself. He's now irrelevant. And there's no putting that back in the tube.
All right.
When he decided to go to Fox and decided, you know, yeah, I'll do international soccer for you, that was the moment when his best friend should have said, Gus, you can't do that because you can't do anything, everything, because nobody can do everything. That's the worst idea anybody's ever had in the world of ambition, and it destroyed him.
Speaking of private planes, y'all see the picture of Mark Davis sitting in coach?
Yeah,
I did. I did just see a picture of him
sitting
in coach. He flies Southwest, normal boarding, yeah. B-class boarding all the time.
I guarantee you it's not B-class boarding. I guarantee you he springs for the...
The $20...
The $22 seat upgrade.
The upgrade?
Yeah, so he could be A8.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Like, aren't you... I'd be too embarrassed. If I'm the owner of the Raiders, I'm getting a rental car before I fly coach. I will drive 1,000 miles in a rental car before I fly coach so that picture is out there of me flying coach.
You know the saying, like, act your age. Like,
yeah.
Act your status.
Exactly. You can't fly coach. You're an NFL... You're one of 32 NFL owners. You cannot fly coach.
That might have been beaten out of him by his dad, though.
I guess, but come on.
Well, no, not I guess, but there are some things that become psychological after a while.
Frugal.
Why else would you go to P.F. Chang's as a regular dietary?
You like the lettuce wraps, man. I don't know.
No, nobody make lettuce wraps made of gold. Don't get you to the same restaurant every night.
Frugal is only charming if it's Sam Walton driving the old beat up truck.
Right.
Frugal's not charming if being cheap defines you everywhere else, sort of. So that is the optic that, hey, I'm sitting in coach has always missed with him.
I don't think of him as cheap. I think of him as perpetually befuddled. But these are choices he makes, not necessarily because he's cheap, but because they're familiar and he likes them. And yeah, we can basically say, well, why aren't you living more like Jerry Jones or Bob Kraft? But given that those are repellent human beings,
yeah, maybe that's not the right
example. I rather applaud the fact that he is that unlike those guys. I just think this is habitual. It just he has a routine. He follows the routine, and I mean, yeah, he could insist on anything he wants,
yes.
But I think he insists on this because it's what he's always done, because getting outside his very narrow box of comfort is disturbing for him.
Speaking of boxes of comfort, Levi Stadium, we've already got Kyle Shanahan urging everyone to come on out there. Steelers fans travel like a mother.
I'm expecting to be a strong 49ers crowd. Pittsburgh always travels well wherever I've been. I don't think we've given our fans a lot to be excited about in the 2 years I've been here at home or the years prior. But when we have, I mean, I think our stadium's been loud. I mean, I always revert back to the Christmas Eve game versus Jacksonville. We were out of it, and I thought our fans were as loud as any stadium I've been at. I felt it last year versus Oakland. I felt it versus Seattle last year. I think our fans come ready. And if we come ready, I think we'll be very happy about our home field advantage.
Hey, I haven't seen a ready fan base and a ready team both, like, reach out and touch each other and ET phone home fingers touching and magic red light beaming happening. I haven't seen that at the stadium. I don't know if it's available. We will find out, I guess, maybe a little bit this weekend, but I've already heard a lot of excuses built in saying that, well, this is the one game where you're actually going to get something for a resale ticket because hope hasn't died yet, and Steelers fans do travel. So a lot of people have already sold their ticket to an interested Steeler fan. We'll see what the crowd looks like. Hopefully Santa Clara Heights has people in the big red cushy seats. Having said all that, and I don't want to get into what is wrong, but I can't help but not share the news that I did see, confirming that I was right pretty much about everything. Santa Clara officials Tuesday night voted to remove the 49ers as managers of Levi's Stadium and effectively strip the NFL team of its ability to sign contracts or buy items for the stadium. Now, a spokesperson for the team, to be fair, says that this is just a retaliatory action from the city of Santa Clara due to the fact that the Rolling Stones just blamed them for the dysfunction at the recent concert. Ian Cull of NBC Sports Bay Area said Santa Clara Stadium Authority, the city council, voted to terminate the stadium management agreement with the Niners for non-NFL events. Right now, the 49ers run ops for games and concerts. They want them stripped of concerts, and you can be sure this is going to end up in court.
No chance of that.
This is not the smooth relationship that I think people were promised and winked and smiled and said, oh, it's a reason to go down and build in Santa Clara.
No, they built in Santa Clara because they already owned the land. I mean, that's where their headquarters were. They just had to get an additional parcel. And so it was a marriage of convenience. It was never a marriage of like-minded people. And beyond that, NFL teams have a long and proud history of bullying elected officials. It is one of the many reasons why the Raiders are going to Las Vegas, because the Raiders, to a minor extent, and the NFL to a great extent, tried to bully Oakland. And Oakland said, no. You know, we're, you know, if they leave, they leave. But you're not taking our land. This is ours, not yours.
It is worth pointing out that both Santa Clara authorities and voters voted in favor of the stadium, though.
They did.
Yeah, but so I think the devil is always in the details of the fine print, which is never brought before the voters.
Fair. Certainly fair. I'm just saying this is not a situation where Santa Clara fought this from the beginning. It's a situation where Santa Clara said, yes, please, come hang out with us, and then it hasn't been all that they've hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm not sure about this, but I think it started with a dispute over the soccer fields near where,
yep,
where the 49ers' offices are. And I think the 49ers either wanted to get rid of the soccer fields.
Well, they wanted to annex the soccer fields.
Yeah, or did not want to, or wanted to annex them and not be responsible for their upkeep.
Right.
And I think that's where this started, which is a Bigfoot move by the 49ers. Why don't you say, can we use this from time to time and we'll take care of the upkeep for you?
They want to turn it into a parking lot.
Yeah. And, you know, it's that's a bully move. You know, yeah, we want this land and we want you to give it to us. And at that point, if I'm Santa Clara, I'm going, okay, this is not going to go well. And it's only gotten worse. And now it's at the point where, yeah, it ought to end up in court. And we ought to find out whether Santa Clara owns the area around the stadium or whether the 49ers own Santa Clara.
And all I can tell you is that they're a little bit worried about what kind of crowd they're going to get, because they're... I mean, it's amazing. You're 2-0 with more juice on your football team than you've seen in a really long time, and you still got guys getting out messages like Matt Breida.
Guys, we need you. The way the faithful traveled to Cincinnati, to Tampa, we loved it. It felt like home games, and I just need to see nothing but a sea of red out there on Sunday, and we'll get the dub.
Did they feel like home games?
Well, they had the same number of people, about 10,000.
Ouch. Yeah, I mean, the thing of...
The point is, they know that this is still a really soft ticket. It doesn't matter that they're 2-0. It's not relevant to the real reasons why that stadium isn't full.
You know what? You know when a crowd really matters? I think these guys are so locked in. Like, sure, you want to get loud on third down, but for the most part, the crowd gets tuned out by the players when the players are so in the game. The look good, feel good, play good aspect that the crowd, I think, really juices is the pregame atmosphere. Pre-game atmosphere, getting guys psyched up and ready to play, I think is where a crowd is most necessary and maybe lacks the most there, because you got people who aren't, you know, they don't even wander in till mid-first quarter. And that's where the huge disconnect in that stadium is and always will be for me. The pre-game atmosphere is empty seats.
I think there's a direct correlation between crowd and game, and that is when the other team has the ball and you want noise so that they have a difficult time calling plays and operating.
Right. That's what I said. So third down.
But that's it. You know, I don't know that. I mean, the players are already at the stadium hours before pregame.
Yeah, but they feed off players' energy. They feed off the crowd's energy. They've been there for hours. They've gotten ready. They've gotten dressed. They've had their meeting. Now they're going out and they're psyching themselves up. It's why everybody wears their own headphones to get into your own headspace, and you're feeling good and you're swagging. And here we are.
I think it's a week long atmosphere. Like in Green Bay, you know, I mean, those players know that they are always on display and they are always expected to be ready to go because they can't escape it. Detroit sells out all the time, but there's no atmosphere there at all because it's just not, that's not part of the deal there.
Well, I mean,
and I think it's clear it's not part of the deal in Santa Clara. It was part of the deal at Candlestick, largely because, A, they won a lot, and, B, there wasn't anything else to do at Candlestick.
Right. That's
the only reason you were going was for the football.
There was no concourse to get lost in. There was no amenity to pull you away from the boring game with another more entertaining option with your back now facing the field.
The most important word you just said there is boring, because it was to describe the football game. Because that is the accurate description of the vast majority of football that has been played at Levi's Stadium. When they start playing interesting games regularly, the seats will be filled at kickoff. I promise. I promise.
I don't know, man.
I promise.
I think the one...
You don't have to worry about it. It's a promise. No,
well, okay, fine. And
sorry, go ahead,
I just put
Ray.
My feet up now.
Go ahead, Ray.
No, I think the one serious problem that's going to prevent you from being right is the fact that for the first 2 months of the season, half the stadium is baked in sun. And people are going to go, you know what? I'm not going to have sunstroke for this team, and I don't care if they're 11-1.
What percentage of Candlestick was baked in sun?
It was never that hot, though. It might have been cooked in sun. You might have had sun in your eye, but it never was more than 78 degrees.
The wind took care of, you know,
heat stroke, but not sunburn.
Right. I mean, it was just glare.
But that was wind burn more than it was sun. I mean,
okay. People will endure obnoxious climates for a good football team.
Here's the thing, though. Here is this. I agree.
Soldier
with you,
Field
Matt.
Is sold out every week. You guys.
I agree. But that's a level of we care about this that trumps the level of we care about this out here. It always has been.
Of course.
And look, you are completely right. If they are 11-0, that week 12 crowd should be amazing, right? I mean, if they are a very good football product, if they are a playoff-bound football product, a very interesting, no matter where they're going in their season, football product, that should mean stands were full at kickoff. If they're not, though, then what? If everything is touching, if you got the team, you got the coach, you got the players, you got the stars, you got the record, you got the uniforms, you got the this, you got the that, it's all coming together, and we still don't have a crowd sitting in between the 40s in these big cushy leather chairs, 9 out of 10 are empty, then everything that I've said, I fear the reality of this stadium to be is I was right.
I don't.
But if they're 11-0, it's November and it's not 85 degrees outside with the sun beating down on you for 5 hours.
I really don't think the sun is going to be an issue if it's a really good football team. And I'm saying next, if they make the playoffs this year and look like a better team next year, then I'm saying whatever the first 4 home games are in the brutal sun of Santa Clara, the seats will be filled. The seats will be full at kickoff. You can't convince me that the empty seats are totally tied to weather. Now,
I didn't say they were totally tied to weather, but they are largely tied to weather because they, in 2014, before it suddenly dawned on people that the 49ers were heading for the toilet, those seats were empty then too, and they still liked Harbaugh. I mean, the bottom hadn't fallen out yet. That stadium has started out with that as a problem. Add to that ingress, egress. Now add to that bad football. Now add to that they have a contentious relationship with their neighbors. It's a recipe for disaster. And the only way that place is going to be filled is if they win all the time and it's November. Because people may go to the games, but they'll stay in the concourse for the first half because they're used to it now.
Super Bowl odds are jumping for the 49ers. The Golden State Warriors will be jumping at Chase Center, and Steph Curry jumped Rachel Nichols through all the hoops of their brand new building, and we're going to come back and hear
about all of that after we run a little What If Wednesday past you. And coming up after, a name game at 420. What are we playing our name game for today? Do you like it, the wrestling? If you like it, the wrestling, you're absolutely going to want to stick around for today's name game. We're going to be playing for a pair of tickets to go see SmackDown at Chase Center on September 24th. It's all right around the corner. 888-957-9570 is the number. Your calls, an awful lot of chances to win. Yeah, we got it for you here. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
A Wednesday afternoon, a What If Wednesday, about to be hosted by the one and only Elena. We're also going to invite you to stick around for a name game coming up at 4:20 this afternoon. Today's name game has got a pair of tickets to go see SmackDown coming up September 24th at Chase Center. The WWE is in town, and we want to send you and a friend to go see SmackDown if you come up with the correct name for today's name game. Yes or no questions. You're kind of on to us, so I think we might have shook you. little shake and bake.
Shake and bake.
888-957-9570. We are going to do a What If Wednesday in just a moment. With Ratto and Kolsky, Dylan, how you doing? What do you got?
Hey, Damon. I just wanted to just quickly jump in and comment on the Levi's Stadium crowd. So I've been to games at both stadiums, at Levi's and at Candlestick. I like the stadium, obviously, better at Levi's, but the game day experience is far better at Candlestick. And ultimately, I think here in the Bay Area, the type of people that there are going to these games, if the team is good enough, I mean, everybody wants to root for a front runner. So I think we'll have a similar situation with the Warriors where once the record gets a lot better, I mean, regardless of the ticket prices, that place is going to stay full.
Well, I hope you're right. I'll say this about Warriors crowds. You did not need a great basketball team to have a great crowd at Oracle Arena back in the day. Like, really, that team stunk and got good crowd, good gate, good atmosphere and attendance. Not all the time. Let's not totally wax romantic about the thin days over there. But the thin days over there were so thin that I was really surprised that they would get 12, 13, 14,000 passionate fans still showing up.
For what it's worth, though, that's not the stadium. That is a reflection of Oakland being a big-time basketball town.
Yeah.
And everywhere is a football town is the good news for football teams.
Well, the other thing is that when you signed up, you know, for your modified season ticket plan, you were always going, well, I'm going to cherry pick
that game,
the Lakers. I'm going to cherry pick the Knicks, the Celtics, the Bulls. And even in their worst years, they were still at 85 to 90%. And most teams, when they're bad on that level, are hovering around 40 to 50%. So, I mean, the Warriors do have that historically going for them, but it's when they start taking credit for, this has always been a great Warrior town. No, it hasn't. It's been a great basketball town. And they have to reinvent that down the road here now, because San Francisco has not been a great basketball town.
Pete and Milpitas, you're on 95.7 The Game, Pete.
How are you guys doing, guys?
What do you got?
Hey, so I do have season tickets for the Niners right now on the Sun side. It is an issue. It's a huge issue. I take people all the time. They always say, you know, I'm never coming back. If I do come back, I'm coming to a night game only.
Did you ever have to ask your season tickets move to the other side of the stadium?
Hmm. Yeah, you can't get them, though. They were all taken, and they usually do like one at a time. They have four. And they only do like one here and there, and you can't get them together.
Pete,
it's pretty much impossible.
Sorry, man. Sorry. Again, I don't want to turn this into a bash Levi's Stadium party, because I'm excited about going down there for the first time maybe ever to see a decent game, and I hope a good crowd, and I hope a good day. I really do. But there is something to be said. It is the only location, the only slice of real estate in all the Bay Area that has lost its original value. I mean, that's not an opinion. That's not me being cruel. That is just a mathematical fact.
And it is the one thing that gives me pause about the Warriors' new place, because everybody assumed when Levi's was built, it was going to be a massive cash cow. And what we found out, and I'm not trying to make a parallel, and what we found out is that all the outside things you need to make a football stadium pay for itself are now suddenly becoming an albatross around that place. It may not become close to being that level of a cash cow, because when you get that public with a big act's dissatisfaction, that basically tells bookers we're skipping that place, particularly because they have alternatives. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen at Chase because, A, it's indoors, and, B, I suspect that there isn't going to be nearly as much contentiousness between the city and the team. But you never assume that a place is going to make bajillions of dollars just because it exists. You make bajillions of dollars when you're really good at what you do day in and day out, and that means booking other acts, treating them in a way that they want to come back later, and embracing a lot of different things, because to make that building pay for itself, they have to have the lights on about 230 nights a year.
And, they're jamming,
and that's a lot.
And they're jamming the acts in there one after another.
Yeah, I mean, that's 190 days of not basketball that they have to figure it out to fill.
By the way, you can win tickets to go see SmackDown coming up a little bit later on today's show. Right now, what if it were a What If Wednesday?
What if I told you hindsight is always 20/20?
The Minnesota Timberwolves select Stephen Curry.
That everything happens for a reason.
With the first selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback to California.
What if I told you it's time for What If Wednesday on the Damon Bruce Show?
What if I told you that the person with the best voice at the station was our producer, Elena? Elena, take it away. What have you got for us this afternoon?
What's up, guys? All right, so this is my first one. Bruce Bochy, you know the guy?
Yes.
One win away from 2,000 career wins, and it could happen tonight in Boston. What if Boch manages...
Victory.
Okay, sorry. What if Boch manages again for another team? Like, he goes away for a year and then comes back out of retirement. Where do you see him, and how do you think the Giants fans react to that news?
So as long as he weren't in the NFC West, I don't think a Giant fan would care. Bochy has so much house money here in San Francisco, he could never spend it all. But I really don't think he's going to do that, because the only way he could damage his own legacy is if he tried to keep it going somewhere else. And I just don't think it, I don't even know if it would damage his legacy. I look at a guy who's been there, done that for so long. This feels like it. And I think the game is changing enough to where, even if it didn't feel all the way like it, he'll make it that.
Quick, how old is Bruce Bochy?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I would say 66, 7, or 8.
64. But I think that's mid-60s. He's more than earned a nice life on the couch, man.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, come on.
It's not a question of what he's earned. It's a question of what he wants and whether somebody will pay him the level of money that he's deserving, because, look, Joe Maddon is likely to get fired even if he makes the playoffs because, among other things, they regard him as too expensive. And there is not going to be another $6 million or $7 million manager. And Bruce Bochy is in that neighborhood now. Plus, I think his health concerns are an issue. And I just don't know where he would go where he has the same level of just sort of simpatico with his bosses that he had here, you know, with Larry Bear, with Brian Sabian, and really to a large extent with Farhan Zaidi. Because Farhan has given him a lot of rope that most managers don't get. And that's out of respect for what he's done. And I think it's been a smart move of his. He gets to make all of his changes next year. But if I had to pick a place he might go, Chicago, the Cubs.
Let's real quick to move on. I don't want to get lost in one question here. Is he going to manage again? Yes or no?
No.
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 Let's, for the segment's sake, fast forward to week 6 in the NFL. We're chilling in sunny Los Angeles.
Yeah.
49ers about to face the Rams. Rams are 5-0.
Yeah.
49ers are 4-0.
Yes.
Division is on the line. Who comes out on top, and what does it mean for the rest of the division?
Garoppolo v. Goff. The battle of the undefeated.
I'm ready for this.
Make it happen. Make it so. What would happen? How about this? On the completely fictitious, does not exist scenario, I'm going to lead the side of experience, and I'm going to say that the Rams win that game. One, it's a home game, so they should.
Los Angeles.
Two, they've got more experience. They have accomplished more than the team that has accomplished nothing, and I'll take them because they're home. There you go.
I'll also take them because they're better.
There's that.
I mean, I'll take the Niners because I'm reckless, and I enjoy this scenario.
Seriously.
Los Angeles.
I like the idea of us all hanging out in Los Angeles for that game.
Wait, I have something for that.
I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
Okay. There's too much traffic in Los Angeles anyway. I can't even handle it here. All right, moving on. What if the Warriors in 2 years actually did get the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo? What do you imagine the Warriors roster looking like with the Greek freak added to the roster?
A lot of tzatziki all over it. Souvlaki for everyone. Anna Kagarages and you would now be the official mascots of the Warriors, Elena. It'd be Greeky.
It would easily be the worst bench in the NBA because they wouldn't have any cap room for anybody else.
Yeah.
They could pay seven guys, and then the other eight spots go to accountants.
I mean, I had something for this, but I can't follow that.
You could. Give it a try.
No, that's it. That's definitive. Well, only Ray Ratto would be able to come up with the negative of the Warriors acquiring Giannis.
Is it going to be Clay and Draymond and Steph and Giannis all still on the lineup, or will they get rid of some of those guys in order to make room for Giannis?
That's right. And it's going to be my son, who at that time will be 2 years and 4 months on the bench. Because they're not going to be able to afford anybody else.
Yeah, I just don't see how they could do it.
And I didn't say it was a negative. They could maybe win with seven guys.
I know,
I'm just saying that
you found the downside.
No, it's not a downside.
A terrible bench is not a downside?
Well, you're the one who said they didn't have much of a bench in 2015 and they won.
I give up.
Next.
Strengthen baby bench? Yeah?
No. Here's the thing. I'll tell you what. So when we get into our 4 o'clock hour here, which is happening in just a minute, I want to get to this Steph Curry sound. Because Steph Curry's talking in a way that makes me go, that's what I want. Like, what do I want? Do I want Giannis coming in and making this team another villainous super team again? No, I don't want that. What I want is Steph Curry having a usage rate like James Harden, throwing down another MVP season, letting everyone remember that he sacrificed an awful lot for Kevin Durant's pouty little puss to come here and find two titles before he found his way to another building that he's bound to pout in soon enough. I mean it. I want Steph Curry to remind everybody. And did you hear that he was going to pull 22 threes on opening night? I don't know what event he was at, but he's like, yeah, when I launched 22 threes against the Clippers. Sign me up for Steph Curry shooting 22 threes every game this coming regular season. I want that. Give it to me.
I agree. And then when he turns 33, give me Giannis as a nice compliment to his incredible skills as they age. Like, the idea of not wanting greatness. I'll never get it. I get it if you're an ardent fan of a team that's going to lose to the Warriors, but give me Giannis all day. Why not? Let's have some fun.
By the way, welcome one and all to your 4 o'clock hour.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.